Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F. We're in Ridgeview Corporate Park. We're also located in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today we have a very special friend and guest of EIG. We have Eric Fabian from Haight and Fabian Law. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So today our topic is going to be real estate in your financial and estate plan. So something that many of us may be involved in personally with respect to, you know, property we own individually. Maybe we have family property or other things. But before we jump in and talk about many great concepts and keep this pretty high level today because it's such a broad topic, why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice? And we know that you've been working with EIG and some of our clients for many years, so we appreciate that.
Yeah, that I have. And it's always been a good experience working with Ellenbecker. Real estate and estate planning, those are two of the topics that I've pretty much focused on, especially after initially starting out in a general civil practice. And as time progressed and I got further into working, that was the two areas that piqued my interest the most, because I was a double major in finance and real estate, and those really went hand in hand. So it's been, you know, about 20 years now that I've been an attorney, and estate planning and real estate are two concepts that really do impact pretty much every single person I talk to. And so it's been a good experience.
That's fantastic. You know, you're located right, really close by, right in...
I'm in downtown Heartland. Yep.
Nice.
So 10 minutes away.
Perfect. And we've really, you know, appreciated the work that you've done for our clients over the years as well. So when we were talking about this concept, because every time we sit down with a new client or someone who's been with EIG now for nearly 30 years, we've been around, real estate is something that is part of their plan. And, you know, it's not always that people put much thought into how to structure things. And as a result, we thought, hey, let's have a show on it. So we're going to talk a little bit about the considerations for different ways to own real estate today. So I'm going to have some questions for you there. Ways to think about how this real estate property, whether it's your roof over your head or your family cabin, how does that fit into not only, you know, the financial plan, the cash needs that you might have, the legacy, you know, how that is going to transfer upon, you know, the passing of a spouse or spouses. And then also, of course, protecting things too, from the standpoint of estate planning. And then we'll keep it pretty light on taxes, because we don't have our CPA in the room, but I'm sure you have a lot of knowledge in that area.
I have a few things to say about taxes.
Excellent. Excellent. So before we jump in on the estate plan side, I thought it would be important to kind of just touch base on the ways to own real estate and the most common areas that people typically would invest in real estate. And so when we're talking about the concept of real estate today, it's not always just the real property, you know, the house. It might involve rental properties or commercial buildings or lake property. So more kind of exclusive, high-end type properties and or farms. The big one we see most often is where families own maybe acreage, hunting land or property for leisure up north. So those things are all really important for people to think about. I'd like to talk a little bit about the idea or concept of utility versus investment, because I've heard it in the past where people have said, man, my house was one of the best investments I ever made. And that's great. You bought it, you got on the train and decided to acquire property. And well, really, what is the purpose of it? You know, is it for you to live in? Is it your investment? Should it be incorporated into, you know, future cash flows? Or the idea of utility, which, you know, I kind of learned this many years ago when I was in banking, that you would maybe think about it as a roof over your head. This is something where I need shelter. I think many people really kind of started to understand that better during the COVID time.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and then kind of moving on from there, and we could spend a whole show just on ideas about, you know, owning it, how do you finance it, all those things, which we'll touch on some of that later. But more so the indirect investment ownership of real estate, which might involve, you know, things that your financial advisor or professional people on your team might recommend. For example, real estate investment trusts, which are sometimes publicly traded or privately traded. Those could lead to things like private equity, private partnerships, or more commonly, if you are a retail investor, maybe owning something in your portfolio that invests in more active managed mutual funds or exchange traded funds. So that's kind of the lay of the land. There are 11 asset classes that people typically would think about owning. Real estate is one of them. And when you do own real estate in your investment portfolio, maybe your IRA or trust, typically you own, you know, a percentage of your portfolio is invested in that as part of your overall allocation. So those are things that are more specific and unique. But I think just setting the table for kind of what we're discussing today is going to be more around the side of owning real estate, the real property element. So with that, Eric, you know, I was just going to ask you, given the importance of what you do, let's talk about how the estate planning elements really kind of fit.
Sure. So whenever I meet with a client, one of the first things I do is I try and figure out what type of assets that they're holding, and I ask whether they own any real estate, and then I want to see copies of the deed. So when we're talking to clients, we want to make sure that I understand how things are going to transfer upon, you know, somebody passing. Of course, that's part of your estate plan. And a lot of people have no idea that some of that's already built in with how they acquired the property back when they bought it. And so I'll often ask, well, is it a joint tenancy situation? You know, is this something you own with somebody else, or is it a tenant in common? And they say, well, I have no idea. Well, that has a huge impact on what ends up happening. So joint tenancy could be going to the survivor of two siblings that bought property together, whereas tenant in common says, upon my death, I want this to go to my children or wherever it is that it's supposed to go. And more often than not, when I ask clients, they have no idea, which is kind of scary if you think about that.
Absolutely.
So in an estate planning context, how you acquire things matters. And so really that's one of the first things that you should do in talking with your realtor when you're talking about buying a property is figure out, how is that deed going to be structured? Is this a husband and wife survivorship marital property? Is this something separate from that? And then from an estate planning perspective, we'll take a look and say, okay, well, how are we going to transfer that wealth to the mm-hmm. next generation? We can terminate a joint tenancy, which may or may not be something that's scary for people too. So there's case law out there that talks about that and the ability to break what you think you've established with, you know, a sibling or a friend now suddenly doesn't go where it's supposed to go. And that's all part of the initial estate planning process. And in estate planning, we're talking, of course, about all kinds of different things, but one of them is the ability to handle things when you're not around. Mm-hmm. Another is to handle it when you're incapacitated. So the idea of a durable power of attorney, that's something where we're looking at and saying, well, if you're incapacitated, who's going to be able to sell that property in the interim when you've got even a temporary incapacity? So really important to have all of your estate planning documents in place so that you have somebody that can execute forms on your behalf if ever you can do so, just due to an incapacity, even maybe a temporary situation.
And who should likely have those documents in place?
Pretty much everybody over 18.
There you go, right? Yeah. Even for those clients that we do planning for, when their kids turn 18, we try to make sure that they at least start with that, because that's like the most basic element, not to mention the healthcare and medical directives. Those are key.
Yeah, durable power of attorneys handle finances. If you can't, healthcare power of attorneys handle medical decision making. Absent those two forms, we're going through guardianships. And so every August, as my clients' kids are going off to college, I meet with all kinds of soon-to-be college freshmen, or people come home in January from college, and I meet with them then. So a lot of younger people I tend to meet with in those 2 months, August and January, for those reasons.
Yeah, it's a relatively straightforward thing to implement. So
it's very, very simple versus going through the court system, which is very time consuming and frustrating.
I imagine. So, well, with that, you know, we're coming up here on a break. We're meeting with Eric Fabian, a local estate and real estate professional attorney that we've been working with for over a decade. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about what happens if people don't have those documents in place. So with that, you're listening to Money Sense. We'll be right back after this break.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, wealth advisor and CFP with Ellen Becker Investment Group. Today, we're joined by Eric Fabian, a local estate planning attorney that has a very specialized knowledge of real estate. And before the break, we were talking about the importance of some estate planning documents. You know, people often make reference to a will. You know, we always make like the visual as you're in the walnut or, you know, nicely cladded wooden room when people open the will. How real is that?
Makes for good movies.
Yeah, right? So people say, well, I have a will, I'm protected, or I'm covered. Let's talk about the difference, maybe just for a minute, about the difference between a will and a trust, and more specifically, how trusts work.
Sure. So I get so many calls from people that say, I need to get a will or I need to update my will. And then when we're looking at what we're updating, it's actually a trust. So it's kind of a term that oftentimes gets misused by people, because that's sort of the common thing that we've thought of throughout the years. But the idea of a will, it's very much upon death type of a situation. So it's a point in time. Here's where my assets flow, and we're going to go through the court system to move your assets from you to wherever it is that your beneficiaries are. We try generally to avoid going through the court system. It's a lot more time consuming, it's more expensive, and it's all public information. So that's where trusts often come into play. And there's so many different types of trusts. That could be a whole couple hour conversation in and of itself. But the most common being a revocable trust. And in a revocable trust, it's essentially disregarded while somebody's alive, but becomes a business when they're gone. You apply for an employer identification number, and now there's this ongoing entity. So in estate planning, a lot of times we'll transfer real estate into a trust while somebody's alive, or upon death, we can have a transfer on death designation that funds the trust at that point in time. But the idea being, we don't want to have somebody's name just sitting there on a deed, because now I have to get it off and I have to go through the court system to do that. Whereas if a trust owns that real estate, well, now there's an ongoing business that one of its assets is real estate and it's being run by somebody. So they can very easily step into the shoes of the decedent and hire a realtor, do whatever they need to do, and get the process started.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, we've seen that so many times where it's been really a smooth transition for someone who's done their estate plan using a trust, because at that point, you know, somebody is named, they step in, they kind of marshal everything, make sure all the bills are getting paid, and then they can kind of determine, you know, what the next step or outcome of the disposition of that property. Now, let me ask you, what happens if they don't have anything at all?
Yep. So if you don't have anything at all, you've died intestate, which basically means you trust the Wisconsin legislature knows exactly what you want to have happen.
Yeah.
That generally is not the case, especially in second marriage situations with prior kids. That's about the absolute worst situation to be in, because inevitably what you thought was going to happen will not be what happens. And if there's kids from a prior relationship, then there's going to be certain rights with respect to a homestead versus other types of assets. And so we want to fix all of that right away. I mean, those are probably the most important times to have a properly crafted estate plan. But really, everybody should have all of this set up in advance. As much as nobody wants to think about it, it's still really, really important to do.
Right. I mean, prior preparation predicts a pretty smooth outcome, I think, if we're doing it right. One thing that comes up, you know, from time to time is, you know, I have this lake property or this very unique, you know, very maybe high appreciated value asset. And they think they want maybe their kids to own it now, versus maybe waiting until they pass on. So there's a lot of concepts relating to taxation that I want to get into with you. Is there any one thing that you've seen or an example you could share of where, you know, maybe that didn't work out well, where someone decided to gift property, or maybe they passed on and then they didn't have something in place for determining the outcome of the property?
Yeah. So with highly appreciated property, you have to give a lot of thought as to what everybody's goals are and what we're trying to accomplish, while at the same time trying to preserve taxation and not get overly taxed. And so a lot of times what we're finding now, especially here in Southeast Wisconsin, is that as mom and dad are getting older, you're going to have the two people that are going to still sit there holding that highly appreciated lake home because they paid so little for it. Now it's worth multi-million dollars. And when they sell it, they're going to have an exclusion for the two of them up to $500,000 in gains on the homestead. But when the gain is 1.5 to 2.5 million, that's a lot of taxes you're paying. So a lot of times now what we're finding is that people will wait until one of the parents passes away before the elder adult sells it, just because we can get a stepped up basis. So if it's a marital asset, one of the benefits of the state of Wisconsin, a marital asset, you have a double step up basis. And so if one spouse dies and they'd bought the property for $100,000 back in 1975 and it's now worth $3 million, well, the basis of $100,000 gets stepped up to the $3 million. And now the surviving spouse can sell it and not have to pay taxes, whereas absent that, we're paying lots and lots of taxes. With gifting, the gift, the basis in the property becomes the basis in the gift. And so if mom and dad tried to gift the property to their kid, well, now the kid tries to sell it and they're going to have a huge capital gain, and they won't probably have that same $500,000 exclusion because it's not even their homestead. So all those types of plans really, really are important with highly appreciated assets, and how we structure things makes a difference. And you really hate trying to fix things after the fact, because oftentimes you can't. And I'm actually going through that exact situation right now, where mom and dad did gift the lake home to a kid, and now we're trying to gift it back. And now we have to file gift tax returns going both directions. Wow. And it's just not a good situation.
So that's kind of that old ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right?
Yes.
Seeking good advice and understanding it. How important do you think it is for people to kind of talk to those that will be involved eventually at some point, just so that they maybe aren't blindsided or just completely not equipped? Is that something that you talk about with your clients?
I much prefer when there's open dialogues between family members. I think that it, you know, the idea of estate planning from probably 50, 60, 70 years ago, people were much more tight-lipped, I tend to think. I don't know that from personal experience, but that's just kind of been my general sense. But as I've met with people, I've seen so many benefits when you talk about what's going to happen in advance with family members, especially if we're talking about a lake home or an up north property or something like that, where you want to keep things in the family. Trying to dictate what everybody should do when you're gone is about the last thing you should do. You should make sure that everybody is on some sort of common ground as to how things should happen in the future with using the mm-hmm. up north property or paying for things, or, you know, what happens if somebody goes through some financial hardship and can't afford their share of it, or, you know, divorce, all these ugly things that we don't want to talk about. But it's really a good idea if you talk about all that within your family in advance before we craft something.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that, not only when it comes to those unique properties, but also other aspects of the financial planning. You know, not that people need to divulge everything that they have, but we most often, or I should say frequently, will get to a point with a client where it's time. You know, they should probably bring the people involved, their kids usually, and have a family meeting. You know, we can craft an agenda that's kind of made in a tailored in a way that isn't intrusive and maybe doesn't create conflict. I think the idea of those types of meeting is to try to avoid that.
Do you typically try and have conversations that deal in dollars, or do you try and be a little bit more generalized on that so that yeah. you're not getting too specific, but having at least yep. some semblance of knowledge?
Good point. For us, it's more about keeping it really high level. And, you know, this is what happens. You know, this is who we've named. These are the people that we, you know, are going to be putting in charge of these different things. And it might be different people for different things. We understand that we don't want anybody to walk away feeling offended. But when I was studying this stuff, years and years ago, the estate planning attorney said, I don't want to be the trustee. Yeah. So it's not always like an honor and a privilege. Sometimes
it's a lot of work.
Yep. Sometimes it's the burden. But yeah, I think that's just been a really helpful thing for us to help the next generation, especially when it comes to understanding taxes. Because that's, from a legacy planning standpoint, that's usually like the biggest thing is trying to make sure we have efficient transfer, right?
Yeah, my general sense of it is what we're trying to do is privatize it and make it as efficient as possible, and make sure that somebody is there and knows what they need to be doing if something should happen when there's an incapacity and ultimately upon death.
Yeah, and you hit a really good point there. Incapacity or health, those are some things that, you know, we can't always plan for. We can plan for, you're kind of making sure that we don't run out of money and we're taking care of things, you know, in a certain light, but the healthcare planning is a big area. So with that, we've been meeting with Eric Fabian, one of our EIG partners that specializes in estate planning, and we're talking about real estate in your financial plan today. So we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we've got some other great concepts to share. Money Sense is brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you're looking for a trusted partner or ready to elevate your financial plan, you're in the right place. With multiple Better Business Bureau Torch Awards for ethics and integrity, Ellen Becker combines expertise with a team member you can trust. Meet our advisors and explore financial resources at ellenbecker.com. Welcome back to Money Sense. We've been having a great conversation today here with Eric Fabian of Haight & Fabian Law. You're in Heartland. Been practicing law for 20 years, you
Almost.
Mentioned. And so we work with Eric on a number of issues, especially when it comes to establishing an estate plan for our clients, typically in the very beginning of when we meet our clients, because we feel that's a foundational element of one of the steps we need to do in incorporating planning. So before our break, we were talking quite a bit about, you know, ownership of real estate and complexities with family members and if you didn't have a will or a trust. But what I'd like to do now is just kind of talk about some of the elements of that planning where it comes to identifying those people involved. Like, how do you normally approach that with the clients?
Yeah. So when I meet with somebody for the first time, I'm going to ask all kinds of personal questions because I need to get to know them. And one thing isn't necessarily true for the next, right? So I need to understand everybody's family dynamics. I need to understand, you know, contingency planning. If this, then that, what happens, right? So trusts are really good because we can say, well, if, you know, everything's supposed to go to the kids, but now I have a kid that predeceases and they've got minor children, how do we handle that for grandkids? You know, what do we do to get wealth transferred generationally? And trusts are great because we can say, well, until a certain age, for instance, I don't want, you know, this grandkid to be able to manage their inheritance, but I also don't want to disinherit them. So we can create contingency planning where there's trusts for their benefit, where until they're 25 or 30, you've got somebody else that you trust that manages that money for them. And there are times where somebody could never control money. So there's, you know, supplemental needs trusts for the benefit of people, children, grandchildren, et cetera. So anybody on a disability, we want to make sure that we're not disqualifying them from receiving governmental benefits, but we also want to make sure there's money there for everything else, for the enjoyment of life, yeah, or for food or for taking a vacation even. So really important things. Asset protection trusts are another thing that I know Ellen Becker really enjoys seeing in a yeah, lot of people's estate plans. They're not for everybody, but the idea of those is to make sure that we've got some protections in place should you have a child that is divorced or gets a divorce or gets sued by somebody. Those are great ways that we can take an inheritance and put protections in place so that it doesn't get divided in divorce or so that a creditor has a really hard time coming after it. And trusts are really good because we can talk about how to fund a trust, and we can talk about titling and how all that kind of goes into this conversation, which mm-hmm, is estate planning and real estate really, and just part of your overall plan. And whether you have a business property or an individual property, all of that can be talked about and funded appropriately. And in investment properties in particular, yeah, we'll have conversations about limited liability companies, for instance, and whether, you know, the single family rental unit that you've got is something that is that in just your name, or is there some protection in place? So those are all really important conversations to have with clients.
I absolutely. And I'll tell you, it's something that people often don't think through enough. They might be at the closing table, you know, signing the documents, and the title officer says, how do you want to own this?
Yep.
And that, I mean, I'm sure you've been in many situations where it wasn't the right answer. That they delivered. So I want to circle back to trust, though, for a second in the sense of flexibility. So once you've written or established a trust and it's been, you know, executed, how easy is it to change?
Sure. So that's a really good question. And the answer is it depends, which is an attorney's favorite answer, right? So there are types of trust where you really have a hard time changing them. You can't change them. An irrevocable trust, for instance, is one where you have these protections in place for various reasons where you might not want somebody to have the ability to change trusts. The most common type of a trust is a revocable trust. That's because you can change it. Mm-hmm. So in a revocable trust, you generally are setting that up for probate avoidance purposes and for passing of wealth and putting protections in place. And very simple to change that. It just is a matter of talking to an attorney and amending it or restating the trust. And a lot of times people are concerned in the real estate context or even just in general with investment context. Well, if I create this trust, how often am I going to have to see you, the attorney?
Right.
And the answer is generally not that much. So unless you're changing the structure of the trust, it's really just an operating structure. So, you know, you've got this thing in place and then it goes back to the funding of the trust, which, as we were saying, you're at the closing. Try to remember, if you have a trust, buy it in the name of the trust. You know, don't wait until the last minute, and otherwise we have to fix that after the fact.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you mentioned it earlier, privatization. So if somebody passes away and they have a will, how is that different than if they have a trust?
So a will is all public information, which is, I guess, good and bad sometimes. And in the state of Wisconsin, we're an open record state, and you go online on the CCAP and you can look people up and find out all kinds of information about any court cases they've been in. Well, a will is part of the probate process when somebody passes away. It's a court case. So that means that your inventory is your date of death value of assets that shows up online so people can see the net worth of assets passing through the court system, the beneficiary names and addresses. That's all online. So it's all public information. So people will send letters to the beneficiary saying, I'll buy that house for cash now. I get those letters all the time for probate estates that I'm working on.
Sure.
Or I'll give you an advancement against your share. Whereas a trust, it's privatized. It's not typically going through the court system to be able to pass that wealth. And so a lot of protections in place because of that.
I had something just kind of pop in my mind here, because I oftentimes will run into situations where maybe people don't have children, or maybe they want to leave their assets to a charity. You know, there's just a lot of different things. Like you said earlier, it's different for everyone. We have blended families, we have second marriages, we have widows and widowers, you know. And so I'm curious, what if somebody doesn't have a person that they would name as their trustee or successor, executor of their estate? What would you recommend in that situation?
Sure. So a couple different points to be made from what you just said. There were actually really good points. So first of all, you know, if you've got just charitable beneficiaries, a lot of times charities don't really want to just take real estate. And occasionally there are types of charities that do, but a lot of times they just want the distribution at the end. And so I've drafted trusts plenty of times, for instance, with somebody that has just charitable beneficiaries, and we're just trying to get a point person in place, somebody that is in charge of wrapping things up so that we can distribute out the proceeds upon the sale of the real estate. And with respect to people that don't have a point person in place to name, there's companies out there that do that. And so we'll talk through various options with people about companies that, you know, do this for a living. They have fiduciary obligations to act in the best interests of people. And so although it sometimes is frustrating to have to say, well, you're going to have to pay somebody to do this, it's a lot of comfort to know that you are paying somebody that does this for a living, and you know that they're going to probably do a good job for
you. And it's going to get done right.
Exactly.
Because for those involved, you know, receipt of those assets isn't important, whether it's a charity or an individual, right?
Exactly.
So we've been meeting with Eric Fabian of Haight and Fabian Law here locally in Waukesha County. We are going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I'm curious, Eric, I want to hear a little bit about more of the real estate in your portfolio, whether it's investing, owning real estate as an investment property, or, you know, maybe leasing or renting out your property that you have. So with that, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to Money Sense.
Hey, if you've been listening to Money Sense, the show that's been giving you financial confidence for the last 35 years, we've got some very exciting news.
That's right. Money Sense is now available as a podcast. So whether you're commuting, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home, you can take us with you anytime, anywhere.
And let's talk about what makes this show so special. Who is this podcast for?
Honestly, it's for anyone who wants to feel confident about their financial future. Whether you're just starting out, planning for retirement, or somewhere in between, we bring insights from experienced professionals who know how to help you build true wealth.
And when we say true wealth, it's not just what you earn. It's the life you live and the legacy you leave.
Exactly. Every episode is packed with practical advice and thoughtful conversations about topics that matter. We cover everything from investing basics to estate planning, tax strategies, and how to align your financial decisions with your life goals.
And here's what I love. It's not just a lecture. It's a conversation. We bring in guests, advisors, industry professionals, and community leaders to share real stories and actionable tips.
Plus, we keep it approachable. No jargon, no numbers, just clear, honest advice from people you can trust.
Speaking of trust, Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group. For decades, we've been right here in Pewaukee, Wisconsin, serving families and individuals across southeastern Wisconsin with one clear mission: exceptional client-first service.
So if you've ever thought, I wish I had a guide to help me make sense of all of this financial stuff, this is it, your weekly guide to financial clarity.
And now subscribing is easy. Just search Money Sense on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app.
Hit that subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode. New content drops every week so you can stay informed and confident about your financial future.
We are the advisor you know, the advice you trust, the voice of EIG.
Welcome back to Money Sense. We're with Eric Fabian. We're talking about real estate in your financial and estate plan. And Eric, I'm curious, you know, when it comes to people that might want to own real estate for investment reasons or for income, how do you typically approach that discussion with them?
Yeah, so typically you want to find out, first of all, of course, do they already own something or not?
Yeah.
Do we have to fix the way that something has been titled? And a lot of times in this day and age, what you're going to look at is an LLC for the ownership of any investment property. And really, that's to limit your exposure on all of your other assets, right? So we don't want something bad to happen and now suddenly the rest of your portfolio gets wiped out because of this bad event. And so people, you know, say, well, I've got insurance and, you know, I'm going to be fine. And I tell them insurance is great when it pays out, but there are times where you might be underinsured or for various reasons that insurance isn't going to cover this type of a situation. And that's where limited liability companies often come in. And LLCs are really good because you can create an operating agreement for, you know, multiple people that own things. And you can say, well, you know, what happens if that person wants out? We could have a buy sell in there. We could talk about death. We could talk about divorce in there. All these things come into play in creating a business structure for the ownership of the property.
On that point, what if one of the partners of the property that's a key person passes or is unable to continue? Risk management is such an important element of that plan, including maybe some insurance type of things. Or just visiting your entire insurance suite of, you know, offering that you are currently using right now, because more often than not, we find people are underinsured when it comes to those types of things. So really a great thing. Now, have you had anyone approach you, say, or mention that they want to do an Airbnb or anything like that?
So you know, Airbnb type properties have their own unique legal characteristics, and then there's certain provisions with which you can rent out without having to file taxes for a short-term situation, very short-term. Really important to have conversations with an expert in that area, because what ends up happening sometimes is you might be in a municipality that doesn't allow them, and that could be really a problem for you as well. So it's not something typically you want to just jump in and start, you know, advertising your house for rent on a short-term basis, because you could run afoul of your local municipality rules as well.
Yeah, I think it's important you do your due diligence. I've heard stories about people buying a condo and then the homeowners association won't let you take part in that type of activity.
Yep, all these long, boring documents that say all these things. Sometimes that's one of those provisions that are in there for sure.
Absolutely. You know, one concept that's come into play more recent, especially since COVID, was the idea that maybe owning real estate isn't for everyone, and that maybe they're in a position where they can rent, you know, in terms of signing a lease or, you know, a contract as a tenant. Is there any advice that you might give to people when it comes to that as well?
Yeah, if they are signing a lease as a tenant, it's really important that you understand the laws in the state of Wisconsin. The landlord-tenant law in Wisconsin is pretty unique. And a lot of times what I find as I'm representing the landlords is that the landlord will have pulled some lease off of the internet that they're going to use. And as it turns out, it has provisions in there that are invalid. And when that happens, it can be a real nightmare for the landlord when they get a lawsuit filed against them. And I, as the attorney representing the landlord, tell them, okay, pay this right away because you don't have a leg to stand on. Mm-hmm. So landlord-tenant law in Wisconsin is so unique that if you're not using one of the, you know, state-specific type of forms like Wisconsin Legal Blank or something like that, mm-hmm. it's probably a good idea to read it really carefully.
Interesting. You know, and on that end, I mean, there's so many areas we could talk about, and we're kind of getting short on time here, but I did want to make one comment. We had some flooding happen earlier this year. It was very significant, especially in this area, and a lot of people are probably still fighting it out with their insurance companies, trying to be made whole on claims. And there's unique characteristics to how insurance policies work when it comes to flooding as well. It often doesn't cover it unless you have a special policy.
Very true.
So I would encourage anybody out there, especially if you're, you know, thinking about the next, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years before you're looking at retiring, or maybe you are in a position where you've got, you know, kids that will be entering, you know, college soon. And maybe talk to your financial advisor, talk to your banker, and maybe implement kind of an emergency plan of sorts, just so that you're not stuck waiting for an insurance check to come in the mail while you're maybe out of your house until you can get that done. I've heard some nightmare stories about restoration companies being so busy they can't keep up. So having that liquidity plan is key. And maybe that involves, you know, having a line of credit or something. Use some of the home equity that you have available, not necessarily that you have to take a draw and, you know, immediately use that money to go do something that's not, you know, maybe head smart, but have a line of credit contingency plan in place. Eric, just back on the topic of owning like an investment property in an LLC, what's your experience with those people working with like a lender? Have they had any, is it straightforward or is it a little bit more involved?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit more involved depending upon the lender that you're using. Maybe not every single lender would be taking on the same sort of people as if it was an individual policy. And that's why it's really important to try and do that stuff in advance of the purchase of the property so you have your ducks in a row. When you do it after the fact, it's a lot more complicated, and then you might run afoul of due-on-sale clauses. That being said, if it's a single member LLC and it's a Fannie Mae property, then after a year you can transfer it without triggering the due on sale clause. But these are all things that you really need to talk to your
people
about. Yeah. So it's not something that anybody's going to know on just a, you know, I tell people I if my car, you know, light goes on, I go to the car guy and I say, what's going on? Because I don't know how to fix this, you know, and it's same kind of thing. Talk to the people that have knowledge.
And I think that brings us back to the concept of the planning and having a good team in place. There's a lot of really great realtors out there that can kind of help you understand what the market's doing, give you some guidance on how to downsize, maybe give you some thoughts on, you know, how to remove items from your home that have been stored up in your basement for years. So those are all things that are really important to consider. When we sit down with our clients and we gather all the information, we look at their taxes, we make sure they have their estate plan in place. One of the things with the estate plan is we want to make sure that people actually take the attorney's advice and get the beneficiaries updated on these things, make sure that the deed is recorded properly based on, you know, the outcome. It's sometimes a really nice fancy leather binder that people take home and put on the shelf, but there's work to be done after. So that's where I think, you know, evaluating it, sitting down with your team should consist of an estate planning attorney, someone who is very versed in tax, potentially likely a CPA or an EA. Eric, you're probably very versed in tax on that end, but on the estate side, a financial planner. And when we sit down with our clients and walk through the software, we'll understand what's the expected use or disposition of this property. Because if someone is, you know, going to use their home to fund their future, you know, retirement spending needs at some point, then how does that look when they sell it and then start renting or move into an adult living community, or maybe they're going to just Airbnb it, you know, here and there for the winter months if they want to go away for some time. So there's a lot of different things to consider with that. And for that reason, I think it's a good idea to make sure you're revisiting your plan. So Eric, any final thoughts before we wrap up our session today?
Well, I think estate planning is one of those things where you say, well, I'll get to it eventually. Nobody ever really wants to discuss it, but I think a really important thing to do, and so often after I'm done meeting with people and we have something in place, they'll say, I really didn't want to do that, but I feel a lot better that I did. So
Well, that's fantastic. And if anybody has any questions or wants to follow up on any of the concepts that we shared today, feel free to reach out to us here at Ellenbecker. And in closing remarks, we want to say thank you, Eric, for joining us today. Very great session.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And if you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. And as always, we hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan and before we advise, certainly before we invest, we always listen. So thank you, and everybody have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in to Money Sense, the show that's been giving you financial insights for the last 35 years. Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, and today we're proud to share a bit of our story with you, our listeners.
Ellenbecker Investment Group was founded in 1996 by Karen Ellenbecker with a simple but bold idea. Financial advice should empower people, not confuse them. Back then, Karen saw too many firms gatekeeping information, keeping clients in the dark and making decisions that benefited the firm more than the individual.
She believed there was a better way, so she opened up her own firm built on transparency, education, and trust. From day one, the goal was clear: help clients make informed decisions.
That's what being a fiduciary means to us. It's not just a legal obligation, it's a philosophy. We take the time to explain the why behind every recommendation so you feel confident about your choices. Because financial planning isn't just about the numbers. It's about clarity, values, and building a future that reflects what matters most to you.
And this podcast is an extension of that commitment. Each week, Karen hosts thoughtful conversations that give you practical advice, covering topics like retirement planning, tax strategies, investing basics, and how to align your financial decisions with your life goals.
We've been doing this for decades on the radio, and now you can take us anywhere, on your commute, at the gym, or while you're making dinner. Just search Money Sense on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app.
Hit subscribe and you'll never miss an episode, because financial confidence starts with clarity, and clarity starts here.